How did you feel putting their jersey on, running out with the boys?
I remember when they gave out the jerseys in Cardiff the night before the game, and I took that jersey and I went into the toilet. I was swimming with Mirza Malina. He probably did the same thing as well, but yeah. I remember taking that jersey in front of the mirror, and I literally just so emotional, because you think back on your whole journey,
to
because it's not all about you, it's your family, it's all the coaches and the guys that you played with, and so all of that just quickly just goes through your mind as you're looking at this thing and realize what a big thing is.
Born in Samoa and raised in New Zealand, Casey Lolala is a former All Black who played center for some of the biggest rugby teams in the world. We'll be diving deep into his career, from his early days with the Crusaders to his time with Munster and Racing 92, and then transitioning from professional sport to his career in real estate.
How was those emotions and transitioning into the workforce?
It is scary. You do come out of that environment into something like real estate, because now you have to create your own schedule, and no one's going to pay you if you don't have a schedule or have a structure in your day.
This is the Fresh Money Podcast.
74% of Pacifica, 56% of Māori feel unconfident or unsure when making financial decisions. This podcast is all about opening up the conversation of money and to help everyone get better at it. So if you can please like and subscribe, it's our promise to interview more people who can help and inspire you to become better with money. Please note that this podcast does not constitute financial advice. If you are needing financial advice, please consult a professional or get in touch and we can point you in the right direction.
Casey, welcome to Fresh Money. A lot of people know you as a rugby player and now as a real estate agent, but I'd love to get to know you before that. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about, you know, where you grew up, where you're from.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me in your first podcast. Very privileged.
Awesome to have you on.
And also something that a lot of people will take a lot of value from it. So yep. My story started in Samoa. Yeah. I was born and grew up in a village called Awhenga. My mum's side is from Salemoa as well.
Okay.
And then we moved into town, a village named Siusenga. And from then on, I went to Marist Primary School in Samoa, and during my secondary schools, out of nowhere, Dad said, "Oh, you're going to New Zealand to continue your schooling there," and
oh, wow.
And I went to Wesley College. So,
how did that come about? Did they come and find you, or were your parents looking out for other opportunities?
Not at all. Dad was just, I think my upbringing and also the way things were going in Samoa, they were, with Dad's job.
What did Dad do for work?
Dad was a pilot. He was flying for Polynesian Airlines.
Yes, I remember that airline.
And I think at that point, how things were going with me, and they said, well, you know, you're better off going to New Zealand to continue your schooling, and so it was purely just for schooling.
Wow.
Nothing to do with any sports or anything like that.
Yep.
But it was the best thing that they did for me. Sort of found myself, found something that I didn't know I had.
Yes.
Because I was put in an environment in a school that all the boys played rugby, and something just clicked on the way, and it carried on from there.
How was it like leaving Samoa? You know, you left your brothers, is that right?
Yeah, there's seven of us. So
one girl and
six boys. I'm the oldest of the family. It was daunting.
Yeah.
Obviously, grew up in the islands. But then again, at the same time, you know, my upbringing was tough with the old man.
Yes.
As you know, that's just how, you know, how it is. That's how he was brought up as well. I get emotional when it comes to this thing, because at the end of the day, it really shaped me and a big part of my story, because it was always, towards the end, I realized that I did, a lot of it was to, not only to prove to myself, but to make Dad proud.
Yeah, awesome, awesome.
So again, when I came over to go to Wesley College, that sort of paved the way and helped me go into a direction that I was able to channel everything that I did.
Cool.
To which became the rugby side of things, to make something out of myself. And
nice.
Eventually, hopefully Dad was proud.
Yeah, there's no doubt he is.
Yeah.
Did you feel a bit of pressure as the oldest? I know in our culture, in Samoan culture, there is a lot of pressure put on the eldest to succeed and lead and find a way for the rest, or create a path for the rest of the siblings to follow. Did you have a pressure, or?
I think there's always that pressure that you don't really realize that you have. I think at that time, I think there were just challenges going through life that I didn't really, it didn't really sort of register that pressure. Looking back now, yes, but it's easy to say that. But just thinking back now on how things has gone, it's like, oh yeah, how things have panned out now. Yes. You're because my brothers, from time to time, they said, oh, you know, they kind of thank you in a way.
Yeah.
But you never thought about it like that. True. It was just more of me trying to make something out of my life and also making Dad and Mom proud.
Awesome. So Wesley, heading into Wesley, had you heard about the culture, the legends that were there? You know, obviously Jonah.
Yeah,
The Beaver, Stephen Donald.
Yeah, yeah.
Those guys had come through there and created the legacy of that school. Had you heard about that?
No, I had no idea. I didn't even know Jonah went to the school.
Yeah,
I can honestly say that.
True.
Because it's only when I got there that I realized that Jonah just left a couple of years before I arrived. And then realized that it was a proper rugby school and it had all these amazing players that came through.
Yes.
And obviously it continued because I was there before Stephen. Beaver was there,
yes.
And then obviously Fikitua was there.
Yeah.
Selala was ahead of me.
Yeah.
And obviously I came through. It was. But one lesson I will say is that, you know, having the right surroundings really helps you go in the direction that you want.
Correct.
I think that was, thinking back now, what Wesley offered was not only made some great friends and we're still friends today, but the fact that it nurtured what I didn't know I had, which was playing rugby, because of the environment that they created, and it was just a real drive.
Yeah,
awesome. To be part of that legacy of the school.
Nice. Because First 15 Rugby has obviously come a long way since then, but even then, the trainings, the coaches that they had are beyond anything they have overseas or anything like that.
I think that's any, with any culture or any sports that do well, the schools have a really strong system, and obviously Wesley was part of, you know, those top schools back in the day. Not sure what's happening now, but you know, any sports that's in schools always do well, you know, internationally with any countries.
Great. Mm. And is that where your rugby career started? Was that when you started getting spotted for kind of age grade teams?
Yeah, yep. Definitely. Because when I came over, I was playing tennis. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so I was playing a lot of tennis. Tried rugby in Samoa, and I think Dad watched me play it once, and he probably is so disappointed.
Okay, you're going to be prom.
yeah. Well, I don't know if we even thought about that. I think Dad must have watched me and said, oh my gosh, what is this?
He's playing tennis. He's definitely a tennis guy.
Yeah, and so obviously got into tennis. which is great, you know. Another thing that, you know, like I have my kids now and expose them to a lot of awesome sports, which,
you know. How many kids do you have?
I have three. Wow. Misha, Iris and Teddy, 15, okay. 10 and 7. But yeah, coming over from Samoa, I played tennis.
Wow.
And then I started getting to the under 15s, and then from then on, it was just, I don't know, it just grew in confidence.
Awesome.
And then once you make one team, you're like, man, I want to be the man.
Wimbledon hero, okay?
Not in, yeah. Well, you know, just, I think, yeah, in all seriousness, it all goes back to just, you know, want to make dad proud.
Yeah.
And eventually, I did it for myself, mom and dad proud. But I ultimately want to do it for myself and show that you can make something out of, you know, out of my life in this case.
And so straight out of school, you went to Counties Manukau?
Yeah.
Steelers?
Yeah. I went straight.
And who was in that team then?
Oh, because the year of Errol Brain and all those guys. I just came after.
Gotcha.
After that. Jonah was there, obviously.
Yeah, wow.
But we were in the NPC, in the top flight.
Yes.
Competition straight away. And obviously, going straight out of school, just to 19 and playing NPC at that time was pretty special. Yeah,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, I was playing outside Blair Feeney. So, yeah, some... And obviously, when we played Wellington as well, I remember marking Tana, who was, you know, you look up to. And then you have Jonah on one side, and then Christian Carly at the back. So again, it was just like, wow. A few months ago, I was watching these guys.
That's right.
Playing.
What's your thought patterns going into a game like that, marking, playing against legends?
Yeah.
Do you just have to just go for it, back yourself? And
yeah, you got nothing to lose. I think at the start of that season, I wasn't meant to be in the Steelers team anyway.
Okay.
But I think after coming back from the New Zealand Under-19 tournament that we had in Chile, he said, oh, we'll bring him in and part of the group and just, you know, familiarise on what's needed to play at that level.
Okay.
And then obviously I just put me on in all the, I think we had two or three preseason, and I played so well because I had the confidence from the...
You didn't feel out of place at all?
No, got natural. Nothing to lose. I was just expressing myself. And then from then on, they picked the team at the end of the preseason and I was in it. And then I didn't even know that I was going to be starting the season as well. I was put in there and thankfully, you know, gained a lot of experience and gave me that dream of going even further.
That's right. And so you had one season with them?
Two seasons. Yeah.
Cool. And then you went to Canterbury.
Yeah. Yeah.
Came down here to Otatahi Christchurch.
Yeah.
Was that a shock around your circle or?
No, I've always wanted to come down and they've always wanted me to come down.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, I remember not coming down. Like I said, look, Keanu's giving me an opportunity. At that time, I think there was, I don't know, close to 20 All Blacks in the side. So in my head, I was like, oh, if I want to play top flight straight away, I'll stay in Keanu's. Which I did, and forever grateful for that opportunity. And then, obviously, 2 years, and thankfully, Canterbury still wanted me to come down.
Yeah, wow,
so
awesome.
I was like, you know what, if I want to play Super Rugby and obviously get on to play for the All Blacks, I need to make the move.
That's
and,
right.
And thankfully, they still wanted me to come down. And so I came down into the end of 2002.
Nice.
And began my journey here, which was, right. You know,
and
unforgettable.
Looking back,
yeah,
it was obviously the right decision. You know, was that three, two championship MC?
Won three Super Rugby in three's NPC.
Yeah, wow.
And obviously countless numbers of Renfrewshire Shield games. So I had a great time here, and I was part of a great team.
Yes.
Great culture, learned a lot from it, and it's great seeing them still doing well.
Yeah. You played, obviously, with some of the legends, the Crusaders legends, All Black legends, Rich McCaw, Dan Carter. Was it intimidating playing with him?
I think once you're in the culture, you...
Or is the environment so welcoming?
Yeah, I think first of all, you know, you come down and you see the older guys and you're like, you're in awe of them because they've done so much, like Mertz, Marshy.
Yes.
Obviously, Doc Blackadder. So all those guys, and then obviously the likes of me, Dan, and Richie were all kind of similar age.
Gotcha.
Ages. So again, you know that those guys are special. Generational talent, and obviously lived up to everything that people thought of them. And so when you're part of that culture, you're just you know, you want to add value as well.
That's right.
It was a really good intensity that we had, but also a lot of care for each other, which created a culture that a winning culture that, you know, it's great to see now that it's still, you know, it's carrying on now. But it was very, very special in that way. Made some great mates. They're still my good mates now.
Awesome.
And so that was a special time of my life, and so many memories.
Nice. What do you think is a key factor that has made the Crusaders so successful? Not just for a short period of time, for a long period of time. It's almost they're in that kind of dynasty era now, or they're known for that. They're known for winning. When people beat the Crusaders, it's almost like they win a final. Yeah, the celebrations are so massive.
That is it's a very good question, Willie. I'll tell you how I felt. I think that's more how I felt from my way being in the... being in the team is, I think, you know, Robbie was a big part of my career, Robbie Deans, and it was a moment where he said, oh, you know, you want to be part of something bigger than yourself, which is, you know, a great statement.
Yeah.
But what does that actually means? And then you look around and you see the guys around you and how they rally around you and doing things together and care for each other. It manifests a lot of great habits, which becomes winning attitude and of how you go about things.
Mm-hmm.
And then that creates an environment that we were just so in tune with each other. And that we will have tough conversations when it needs to have tough conversation.
Nice.
And for me, the way I saw it was just like, okay, I know exactly what I need to do in this team. And I don't want to let anyone down because I care for them. And I also, part of that, you know, you start to see the results and what's happening. And you're like, you know what, I'm going to do everything in my control to add value to this, and also I don't want to lose my position to someone else as well.
that
competitiveness comes in play as well. But again, you don't think about that because everyone's in tune and caring for each other, that you just don't want to let anyone down. And then it comes to the game, and then you do extra things on the field because it's not because it's your job. You do it because it's you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Yes.
And I know vividly in moments in the game when I was tired and I needed to make a covering tackle, that I didn't do it because I was like, because I really wanted this group to do well, and part of that is doing, you know, a sacrificial act or extra effort.
That's awesome.
To make a difference.
Yeah.
Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, you know? It does. Yeah, so it's kind of gone from like, hey, here's your roles, to transitioning to, I care about this team, I care about my brother next to me, and I'm going to put my body on the line because of care. How does it transition from like a job to care? Like, you don't really hear that in rugby circles about, oh, my, you know, I care for this person.
Mm.
You know, people wouldn't have said that at the time, but that's how you're verbalizing it now.
Well, it's more what you, it's by what you do, and you know, one thing saying something, and you know, another thing is bringing something to life. Mm. And I think whatever we come up with and what that looks like, what care looks like, you know, that's what you do. But no, not, you're not going to do it because it's written down or we agreed on it. You get to a point in a in time where you just do it because that's what culture is, and culture is way of doing things. There's just, And I've seen it so many times that, you know, talented players and guys that come to the team that are great, but again, they don't consistent enough to do what it's needed, you know, they get found out. In with a high performing culture like that, there is no space for mediocre or people. And don't get me wrong, everyone has moments, but it's always the what you do after that, you know, that defines you to be part of that.
True.
And that not only that, you know, creates a lot of character.
Awesome. And you went on to don the black jersey. You know, it's every kid's dream in their backyard. You know, you're running down, like, I remember, you know, pretending you're Jonah, fending someone off, my younger brothers normally. You know, but it's every kid's dream, a lot of kids in New Zealand's dream to be an All Black. You got to wear that jersey. How was that experience? How did you feel putting that jersey on, running out with the boys?
I mean, I remember when they gave out the jerseys in Cardiff the night before the game, and I took that jersey and I went into the toilet. I was rooming with Mils Malina, shout out to my brother, and he probably did the same thing as well. But I remember taking that jersey in front of the mirror, and I literally just so emotional, because you think back on your whole journey to because it's not all about you, it's your family, it's all the coaches and the guys that you played with, and so all that just quickly just goes through your mind as you're looking at this thing and realizing what a big thing is. Again, you know, you got to bring those emotions to a level that you can still perform at a really high level, but wow. And then, obviously, got to sing the national anthem. Yeah. That was special.
All the emotions.
Well, mum and dad was in.
Yeah, true.
It goes back to those moments where you're like, man, I just want to, you know, making dad proud. And so, yeah, it's just. But again, you got to switch. You got to make the switch because you got a test match to play. And these Wales haven't beaten us for over 60 years. So, again, you channel those emotions, and then you come back to earth, and then bang, because last thing you want to do is be on the wrong side of the kickoff.
That's right. And then you're like,
one job, mate, and you're on the other side when you're supposed to know your job. And that's the thing, you just gotta but you know, that's what we do and train to do, is be professionals and know exactly where you need to be and what to do.
Nice.
When you switch it on, you gotta level up and perform. Yeah. Because not only you've earned this, now it's time to shine.
Mm.
And it was great.
What do you remember from the game? Did it go fast? Or a lot of people say
all I remembered was I couldn't hear myself because Wales was leading the whole time.
Wow.
And I couldn't. It was a closed roof, 80,000 people in there, and me and Aaron major in the middle, and I couldn't hear him because it was so loud.
Wow.
Because obviously they were winning, so there was the opportunity to win the game, win the test match. And the other thing was giving the last pass to Joe, which scored an amazing try to put us ahead and eventually ended up winning the game.
Nice.
So,
nice.
Yeah, the magician did his thing. I just had to give him the ball.
Awesome. So after your time with the Crusaders, yep, and as an All Black, you went to Cardiff. Cardiff Blues, is that,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
What was the draw there? Like, were you looking for other options? And I suppose why did you leave at that time?
Oh, good question. You know, I played well in the last sort of couple of years in the Crusaders, and Ma and Conrad, you know,
yep,
established an amazing partnership that's, you know, legendary and obviously one of, yep, the greatest pairing ever. And congratulations to them, because they really earned that. And so for me, I knew that it was tricky for me to get back into the All Blacks. And so I just, at that time, I just thought, oh, you know, I'll go overseas and experience, with the plan of maybe coming back.
Yep.
But again, when you're over there, you enjoy the, you know, being in Europe. And so that's how I ended up in Cardiff.
Nice.
And so Cardiff, Munster and Racing were the clubs that was, you know, gave me an opportunity.
Yeah.
But I went with Cardiff, and this is the reason why. I injured myself in 2009. I broke my arm, my left arm, and during that time, I knew straight away it was time for me to go. I had a great season up to that point, playing so well. And then I injured myself, broke my arm, and then the three clubs were the ones that they were on offer. I didn't want to go to Japan because I feel like I still had a lot to offer. So I went to challenge myself in European rugby. And the only team, the only coach that called me to see how I was the Blues.
Yeah, wow.
Was the Cardiff team.
Wow.
So, you know, again, it's the life lesson of just caring for people.
That's right.
Going back to care.
Yeah.
A simple phone call from the coach to see how I was. And that solidified my decision, even though Munster and Racing were offering more money.
Okay.
But I just felt like that went a long way. And someone like myself, that was part of a culture that was all about care.
Awesome.
But for
I suppose that's anyone, like, people genuinely just want to be thought of and cared for, right?
So 100%. So, you know, if a lesson for us is, like, if you know someone that that needs to check up on, then you go ahead and make that phone call. That's all it did. And I signed for Cardiff.
Nice. Well, interesting enough, those three offers in the beginning were the three clubs you ended up playing for, right?
I know. Right.
How were the experiences in Ireland and in France? Because obviously quite different.
Yeah, very different. When I was in Wales, love the people there, still keep in touch with them. Ireland was so different as well. Irish have a identity around the world.
Yes.
So again, it's so nice when you go into pubs and, the Irish pubs, you know, like, I've been to all those counties and part of that culture. And in Paris.
Yes.
Paris. Paris is very different.
Yeah.
It's its own country in France. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, so you can't compare the three because
they're all extremely different, aren't they?
Very, very different. And my son, Teddy Theodore, was born in Paris.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And we had a great time there.
Nice. So he's a Parisian.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
And you learned, you know how to speak French, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So I got to...
Are you fluent?
Yes.
Wow.
which is nice.
Yeah.
But when I went there, I wanted to speak French.
Did you take classes or?
We took classes for a bit, but then again, it was just getting out and because I just made the decision. Before I leave here, I'm going to speak French. So I, just got along with the boys and instead of sitting with all of
the Kiwis,
the expats, I'll go and sit next to the French boys and just
get immersed in it.
And just keep asking the question.
Are there similar flows to Samoan?
No.
No, is it very, quite different?
I think that A, E, I, O, U is probably the same.
Okay.
But other than that, it's just the pronunciation is very different as well. So, and it's nice when it comes out of your mouth, isn't it?
Sounds very, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Sexy, doesn't it?
Yeah, very. To say the least.
Yeah, don't say anything now. We'll try and stay on task.
Right.
I do want to ask about that tradition of the champagne. Like, I've only seen it on TV.
I know, right?
I saw Dan Carter with, you're there with your flutes and your blazers on. Yeah. What's that about?
I think it's just a tradition. Being in Paris in a club that, it's also a country club that has golf, all the sports in the country club, tennis, so they've got that the persona or that...
And is it before the game or is it...
This is before the game.
Before the game.
You walk in with your blazer and it's your... Yeah. And then you have... This doesn't happen all the time.
Okay.
But it's such a great tradition you see it every now and then and you're like, man, wow, that is so Parisian.
It's quite different to...
Very different.
And it's grassroots rugby here in New Zealand.
100%. And it adds a little bit of, flair to the game.
Yes.
And which is also... You identify that as that's the racing team.
Yeah.
So that's a cool thing.
Yeah, it is. I've never seen it until I saw it on the news 100%. One time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's talk real estate career.
Mm.
So when did you start planning your transition out of rugby? Was that at racing, or was it prior to, before that, or?
So after at racing, on my fourth year, I injured my knee. And from then on, the coach that was coaching then gave me the opportunity and said, you can come do some coaching with me. You can run the skills and help me with some of the attack. And so I took that opportunity in racing. And he, at the end of that year, that was in 2018, at the end of that year, he got selected to be the attack coach for the French national team. So again, for me, I didn't get the opportunity to stay back because they needed someone more experienced to take over the attack for racing. But fortunately, the coach down in Toulon, he flew up and met with me and he said, come down and do coaching in Toulon. So I coached in Toulon, really enjoyed it. We had a great team, and then COVID hit. So from then on, we made the decision of coming back to New Zealand.
Gotcha.
And once I got here, I got the opportunity to coach Canterbury in 21, just helping out there. During that time, it just didn't have that same passion again. So I just thought, you know what, let's get on with things. But then, obviously, in the background, the real estate was starting, get a lot of interest in it as well. So, and that's how, and I thought, you know what, I'll go into real estate. But even then, I didn't know how it was going to pan out.
Gotcha.
But once I found out what it's all about, the people, we always say, Kia. There you go. Isn't it amazing, eh? It all links up.
That's right.
With that, when you have a relationship with somebody, you don't have to sell them anything. So, and I thought that was powerful. And so for me, it's all about building that relationship in real estate. And I absolutely love it.
Nice.
They're tough times, but again, what isn't?
Yeah, that's right.
What industry that you don't go through tough times? So again, but I knew that I love being in front of people, and I love speaking to them. And if that's the number one thing, I think I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, cool. As a mortgage broker myself, I've spoken to and helped a lot of kind of ex-professionals kind of with their properties, investment properties, or purchasing their first home. And I've asked them about that transition from sports into kind of, you know, careers. And a lot of, not all, but a lot of them have found that scary. Because it, you know, you're doing something, it's all you know. You know, rugby was all you know. Was that scary for you, a bit intimidating? Or how was that, those emotions and transitioning into the workforce?
It is scary. You know, for me, it's been like 20 years of, you know, everything planned out for me.
Yeah.
You know, I know exactly what the week looks like. I'm going to play on Saturday or Sunday. And, you know, you have people that will do things for you because they're part of a team. So again, that in itself is tough when you do come out of that environment and into something like real estate. Because now you have to create your own schedule. And no one's going to pay you if you don't have a schedule or have a structure in your day to make sure that... you know, it is emotionally, it's very scary as well, because like you said, all we knew was playing rugby and turning up and training. And it wasn't even training, because it was something that we loved. And it's a true definition of, you know, if you love something, you know,
it's not work.
It's not work. Mm. And then going from doing that to real estate, now that you have to plan everything yourself, you know, it's tough. But also, I like to self-analyze how I go about things. Just because of being in the high-performance environment in rugby, you got to constantly look at yourself, how you can improve.
That's right.
And from that, you become a student of life, you know, not just in sport and now with real estate. It's like, how can I be better? Because I can be better, I look after myself, have a good routine, I can move forward in my career. And, you know, and I dive deep into podcasts and...
Awesome.
It's, you know, feed yourself with the right things. But then again, it all comes back to you doing it, you know.
It's executing,
Yeah.
Yep. Performing on the day.
Yeah. Yep. And just picking that one thing and just sticking to it consistently. Before you know it, you know, you're further down in your journey, in this case, my real estate career.
Yeah, you mentioned you know, a couple of things that you did in rugby. Now you've had to do them now in your real estate career.
Yeah.
Are there any other examples of that? That you know, that of the skills you learnt in rugby that you can transition over to real estate?
Yeah. You know, the easiest, the most obvious thing is obviously the discipline that goes with it. What that looks like in real estate is very different. Well, it's the same in a way that, you know, you got to have a structure and a discipline of staying in doing those same things every day. Like, you got to, for real estate, you know, from 10 to 12, you got to make your phone calls, touch points with the customers, and doing that every day, for a number of weeks. And also for me, I think the biggest thing for me at the moment with real estate is just learning how to deal with people. My word this year is patience.
Yeah, nice.
Because I'm so used to, in the rugby world, where you don't say much, but you put me on the field and I'll just do my thing. Yep. And that speaks for itself. Now it's very different now. And if somebody says something to you in that environment, you know that it's going to get done.
Yep.
Or otherwise, I'll let him know that you can't say that and do something something else. Whereas in real estate, a lot of it is facilitating, and you're dealing with people's biggest assets. And so if they change their minds on something, or deciding not to go to the market, or deciding to go with someone else, I need to realize that that's okay, because they do what's what's best for them.
Yeah.
And so for me, understanding that is a big growth for me going forward in my real estate career. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Whereas you're like, oh, you told me like you're gonna give it to me.
You were my customer.
Yeah.
You've betrayed me.
There's just so many moving parts.
Yeah.
In the real estate world, in your
so many variables, 100%. That you can't control. Whereas probably in rugby, there's still a lot of variables, but you can only control your role.
100%. So. Same thing with real estate. Yeah. You just think, oh, can I control that? You know, if I added enough value for them or trust for them to go whichever decision they go with, I think that what's makes me feel better at the end of the day is knowing that, okay, well, I couldn't have done any more.
Mm.
Right? You know, you go into the next, the next thing. In time, I get to learn more, and that's the exciting part of it.
Yeah, awesome. As a Polynesian man, like Samoan, we're quite reserved.
Yeah.
We're kind of generally shy, I suppose.
Yeah.
Being a real estate agent means you have to be out there. You have to have your profile out there, your picture out there. Marketing yourself, your services, does that, I know it doesn't come naturally to a lot of Polynesians, does that come naturally to you?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But I think with anything, I think the more you put yourself in a position and you self-analyze and you see where you see growth, it's something just clicks. And I think in regardless of what race you're in, it almost that's irrelevant. I'm not saying it's not relevant because you can't discount off how we were brought up.
Yes.
But I think I'm at a stage of my life where I keep putting myself.
Yeah.
And one thing I will say that I've learned a lot from being in the Crusaders environment is the applying yourself. You know, you got to keep applying yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't. You have a drill that you have a first five, second five, or you know, and if you keep putting yourself in the last man, well, you're not going to challenge yourself much.
Yeah,
so you got to apply yourself by putting yourself in those tough situations, being at 10, making decisions.
True.
So again, for me at this stage, I'm just focusing on applying myself, which goes back to, you have all these self-developments, but at the end of the day, you got to apply yourself, you got to do it. And the more you do it, the more you realize, oh my gosh, light bulbs just keeps going off because you just keep going to different levels of what you can achieve as a person.
Awesome. Because I suppose it's one of your key roles, isn't it?
Yeah.
As a real estate agent, marketing is extremely key. So.
Yeah. We say in the real estate world is who knows you as well.
Yeah,
so nice. You got to be in front of people, whatever. But you got to be consistent with anything that you do.
Cool. Let's talk income. Because I'm in the finance and property industry.
Yeah.
I have a vague idea of how you guys get paid.
Yeah.
But can you kind of explain how it works just briefly? Are you guys commission based? Is it right?
Yep, very much commission based, which is also a driving force in how we go about it.
So if you don't sell,
you don't get paid.
You don't eat.
Yeah. So that's why it's really important going back that you need to have a structure in place that will make you consistently do things that are dollar productive.
Yes. Yep.
And the more you do that, and obviously with any industry, you got to be in it long enough and consistent enough and doing the same things long enough to see the results.
Yeah, awesome.
And that's why, that's why we love this challenge, is that, you're unemployed every day, as we say as well. You don't work, you don't get paid.
True.
So.
True. But so in terms of, like, for an example, let's say I sold a house for $500,000.
Yeah.
How much commission could I expect to get from that? And does it, some of it, does it all go to me? Or does some go somewhere else? Or
like to this, because part of, obviously I'm in Harcourt's Gold, in the Harcourt's umbrella. Part of the value that we add is obviously the brand that we and obviously what I mean by that is we have systems in place that pushes people's house to maximize whatever they'll get from the house.
Yep.
And also the way the commission is structured as well in within Harcourt's, where 40% of the commission goes to the buyer's agent.
Gotcha.
So again, and that's why when you have a listing going up, in Christchurch itself, every franchise sees your listing. So if you don't have a house to list, you have a couple of buyers that you're like, oh, you know, this house suits them. So they, because of the commission structure, it incentivized them to bring their buyers, which creates competition for the house, which drives the sale and obviously.
So you sell it. Let's say you're selling a house, and you just said a buyer's agent brings their buyer in, and they buy the house off you. So you get commission from your vendor or seller, and then that gets, so 40% of what that income is goes to the buyer's agent. Okay, cool. I was just trying.
Which is a lot. You know, that's nearly half of you working your, but that's
because you're marketing the property and doing all the work.
You're doing all the work.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's the power in the Harcourt's structure.
In that kind of collaboration.
In Christchurch.
Yeah.
So if I have a house in Wollaston, I know that even though I'm far away from that market, but I know that I can call up any Harcourt's people there. But I know that if I have a listing going up there, you know, they or the agent over there will bring their buyers.
Yeah, I see.
So, but yeah, that's how it's structured.
Yep.
In Harcourt's.
Right. So there is potential for, like, obviously if you're doing well, selling a lot of houses, there is a financial upside to being a real estate agent.
Yeah, and it's obviously, otherwise no one would do it.
Yes.
But you gotta be, you know, you gotta work.
Yep.
Hard and smarter and, there's no easy way. Just like anything.
True. But I'm guessing it's not all bling or money.
Oh, no.
So before we all get carried away and give up our jobs and become a real estate agent, there must be a hard side to it, right?
Oh, it's so tough. It's so tough.
Yeah.
The toughest thing is because it's the unpredictability of it. And you're starting off, you can go 2-3 months without pay.
Yeah, wow.
So and that's a hard thing. And so, again, it's... You know, outside of the cars and the thing, it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard. So, yeah.
So would you, if you know, you're giving advice to someone who's looking to become a real estate agent, would it be beneficial for them to have, say, what, 3 or 6 months worth of expenses
definitely.
Kind of stored up as a kind of emergency fund?
Yeah. No, definitely. And that's what mostly, because those
are
what
they do.
Yeah.
Is that common practice?
Yeah. That's what people do, but usually some of them, they're, you know, obviously a couple, one has a stable job, and then the other will start their career in real estate, and then you find out yourself whether it's for you or not.
Yeah.
But again, you know, once you get a few deals over the line, it gives you that boost.
Yeah, nice.
And then you. So it's a real momentum thing as well.
It's kind of, I suppose it's very much like rugby, isn't it? It's that kind of confidence. You play with confidence and then you do more of those activities.
Mm.
They get you more customers and business.
100%.
And just kind of compounds on it.
Database, like, you know, all about that.
Yep.
And keeping in touch, you know, all those touch points that goes with it.
Yep. Nice. So you're with, I just want to get it right, Harcourt's Gold.
Yes.
Here in Christchurch.
Papua New office.
Nice. And you're working with Cameron Bailey, who's a very accomplished and established real estate agent here in Canterbury. What have you learned from him and his team?
again, goes back to those, got a great structure in place.
Yeah.
I think for him is also being through, you know, the early stages of his career, working buyers, and because he knows the market inside out, you know, you always go with advice on things. What do you think of this? What should I do? Negotiation side of things, which is, you know, you got to be a master of it, which he is. But there's just so many people that I, you know, could draw a lot of answers from, you know, the owners Lynette and John McFadden as well, and Chris Kennedy. So again, this is just, it goes back of having that team.
Yeah.
You know, and team, if you have
experience, people,
you don't feel like you're there
on your own.
On your own. Yeah. Even if you're on your own as a business, you know, you have a lot of people in there to draw on and for help. And that's the power of it.
Yes.
You know? You know,
doing
you go
it together, right?
Yeah. You go and see someone that's got a $1 million house to sell. And they feel a lot more confident if you go there with your team and say, look, I come here with the whole team, and it gives them confidence.
Nice. What skills or qualities do you need do you think to be a successful real estate agent?
Good question. Definitely you got to be a good communicator. It's all about relationships in what we do. And I think also just relationships is really important, obviously. And just you're constantly problem solving the whole time.
Yeah.
So you got to be a solution based person as well. Nothing's an issue. Okay, what we do next? So in that, you know, me saying problem solving. And some of the most unassuming people are the best people in real estate, because they just have this amazing focus on something.
Yeah, wow.
And I think, you know, they have this real, you know,
drive
because they're able to focus for a long period of time.
Okay.
And I think that's a real thing, because you can do a lot of things that are not really driving your business forward.
Yep.
So that's why I want to get to a point where I can have a team of my own.
Nice.
Whereas I love being in front of people, and I would love to have someone that would just do other stuff that I'm not good at, and then I can just focus solely on doing those things.
Yeah, focus on your strengths and someone else kind of.
Yes, but at the moment I have to do it, you know, mostly on my own, which is fine, because then I can learn, you know, what really.
Yeah. You can go deep on the process. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, cool. If I was a buyer looking to get my first home today, what would be your top tip for me to get on the property ladder in this current market?
Well, you know yourself, we got to come see you first.
yes, true. Come see Mooresboro, come see Willie.
So I'll ask you, what do they need first?
Yes. Okay, you turned that question on me.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's pre-approved finance, really.
Yeah.
So as a mortgage broker, we talk to them, understand their goals,
what they're
wanting to achieve, first home, second home, investment properties, and then we go through their finances, and then with the goal of getting them a pre-approval letter.
So that's the most important thing for us is that you qualify them first, because otherwise you lose a lot of time, not only for myself, but for them as well. Whereas if we set those goals and see where their finances are at, it's so easy then to go show them different properties, what suits them.
So you have quite a few properties that you know and see, and obviously your listings as well, that might suit what they're looking for.
But you also you find a house that you're like, this ticks a lot of boxes. You gotta know what are the non-negotiables are. You know, if they have a small family, okay, that's 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, and if those are non-negotiables, then you take them to houses that ticks those boxes. Gotcha. You won't get the always ticks a lot of boxes, because then some of them is all about the house and not the location.
Yes.
Because they'll tell you, okay, we want to live on the west side, you know, like somewhere in Burnside. But then you take them to a house, you know,
somewhere.
St. Martin's.
Yeah, yeah.
And they say, oh, this is perfect for me. Then you realize, oh, it's actually, it's about more about the house.
Gotcha.
Than the actual location.
Yeah.
But sometimes they don't know that until you...
True, true. Until you take them there. Until then you they have them, that kind of realization.
100%.
Yep. And what do buyers need to look out for when purchasing a property?
Well, as you know, we had earthquakes down here. So again, it's all those EQC... work has been signed off. But then again, we always get a building report as well, just to make sure that the floor levels are within the measurements of getting insurance. But those are little things that sort of, if the house is structurally sound, you're fine to go ahead with anything. Okay.
So that's is that part of the research around property that they're looking at?
Yeah, but that's between me. That's why working with an agent, buying a place, you know, those are the conversations I have with the
other agent. Guide them through?
Yeah, okay. We guide them through that, making sure that they have knowledge on those things.
Okay.
I mean, we got to add value somehow.
That's right.
And that's how we come in, show them houses that off-market houses, and also, you know, seeing what the motivation of the seller is. Because sometimes we think, oh, they want too much for it. Well, how do you know that? You know, their situation could determine what they will sell the house on the day.
Yep.
And so that's where we try and dig deeper into the situation. Because
that
house might be the perfect house for them.
Nice. So what about for your vendor or seller? Well, what's the best thing they can do to... you know, potentially get the best price on their property when selling?
Again, it's all about the first impression, you know. You know, the outside, making sure it's clean, do the gardening, mow the lawn, little things like that. Inside, you know, if there's too many photos of you know, you're trying to declutter the place so that people... can picture themselves when they do come into the house.
When you say to people declutter, and then do you go in and provide
a
recommendation of what their version of declutter might be different from your version of 100%. Declutter?
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, put anything that doesn't need to be there, like a wall full of pictures. You're like, you know, you can have one or two pictures there, and then so that people can say. That loves art and said, "Oh, we can see this painting on this wall."
Yep.
So yeah, that's an example of it.
Nice. There's lots of ways to sell your property. Which is the best? Is it auction, deadline sale? A lot of these terms, a lot of people won't fully understand. If you want to, what's the difference between an auction, deadline sale?
An auction and a deadline is pretty much the only difference when it comes to a marketing plan is you pay for the auctioneer. But the auction is so transparent because you know exactly what the next person is gonna bid. Whereas when it was a deadline sale, you have no idea.
Okay.
So you have a feedback of where it should be, but at the end of the day, when you put a figure on paper, that could be 30. If you really love it, you put an amount
I see. So deadline is when a whole bunch of people put in different offers, and then the highest one wins. Yeah.
In that as well, like not only the highest offer wins, because then you'll have some conditions that comes with it, like conditions of finance or selling a house or the LIM report and everything like that. But usually when people put in a fair price, they can go unconditional because they've done their due diligence before. And for an owner, they look at that and they're like, the certainty of having an unconditional offer, they'll take less money
for for the certainty of the getting it sold
then and there.
Then and there.
And so the auction is obviously everyone's bidding, but you can see who and what they're bidding 100%. At the time. Okay.
But then again, if you don't sell on the auction, then you can go into the next stage, which is you can go into a deadline.
Mm.
But because of the feedback you've been given through the campaign, you can price it straight after the auction if it's not sold under the hammer.
Gotcha.
And then you can run another 2 or 3 days of deadline if you know there's more interest.
Oh, okay.
So that's why we always prefer the auction, because of the three-stage process. If somebody really loves the house and ticks a lot of their boxes, they can make a pre-auction offer.
Okay,
which is still an unconditional offer.
Yep.
And then they'll bring the auction forward.
So if someone puts in a pre-auction offer, it will change the date of the auction, is that right? It will trigger that moved forward closer to, just sooner.
Yeah, sooner, so that it catches other people out.
Ah, I see. It means everyone else has to get the action.
Yeah, because the action. So it's all about creating that urgency. Ah, I really like the house, so I'm going to bring the auction forward. Doesn't give you another person the opportunity to do their due diligence, or they're not ready yet to buy. Whereas another a week on, or another 2 weeks on the campaign, you know, there'll be more people that will want to buy the house. True. Whereas if I like, as soon as I want to buy the house, I'll bring the auction forward. And then if it doesn't, and so if it doesn't sell under the hammer, and then you go into the third stage.
Okay.
And that's the beauty of it.
Is that when you can make offers? Still?
Yeah.
The third stage?
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But it's so sharply done because of, you know, you price it in the way that...
You price the property correctly.
Correctly.
Which is fair, but still competitive. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you price it too high, people don't see value. They don't put an offer in.
No one turns up to
100%.
Okay.
Because if you price it sharply from the feedback you got on the... you got from the open homes or the feedback, then all of a sudden you get three offers, which gets them into competition to push the price back up. Because if somebody loves
it. So you're gathering research at open homes and all along the way to establish a fair but competitive
price. So we work hard on getting on the phone, getting those feedback and where people see value.
Okay.
And people are educated now with all the platforms that we have.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, you know, it's very different when you go to a certain property and people see, you know, it's updating. The kitchen is still original. And then they're like, from the price that they had in mind, because of the kitchen's not done properly, they'll drop it another 10, 20K.
Okay.
You know, because that needs to be done.
Nice. Okay, let's talk money. If we go back to the beginning of your rugby career, you went straight from Wesley straight into professional rugby, really.
Yeah.
What was the kind of... I know it's changed now.
Yeah.
But what were they offering you at that time, approximately? Yeah.
I think the...
For the Steelers.
Steelers, I don't know, 25, 30K.
Yeah, okay.
But for, you know, a teenager, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
I remember I was playing for New Zealand age groups, and I think I got $2,500 in my bank account. And I felt like I won the lotto.
And coming from the background that you came from, that would have been a lot of money.
Well, just any kid, you know, just having that much money, it's pretty...
What did you go out and buy straight away from
what
that.
The first thing I bought when I did, obviously from memory, when I made the Crusaders, the first thing I bought was a golf club.
A
set of golf clubs.
Nice.
Because I obviously played a lot with my uncle, but I needed my own golf clubs, and so I went
that's an investment, isn't it? No.
It is an investment.
Yeah,
it's all about well-being.
That's right. I like it. I like how you spun that. Yep, nice. Do you consider yourself good with money? Do you have a budget?
I think I do now.
Because for a lot of Pasifika, Māori, we don't really talk about money. You know, that's one of the goals of this podcast, is to talk about money. If you're a guy coming from nothing straight into earning, you know, thousands of dollars, you know, that money can just disappear.
Yeah. I'll be very transparent with you. Even though mum and dad are really good with money, that doesn't always translate to, you know, the kids being good with money.
Mm.
I did come over when I was, at a very young-ish age, 13.
Yeah, that's really.
And so I was sort of had that
disconnect. You came over by yourself?
Yeah, I went to boarding school.
Yep.
So I had that disconnection between, I saw what mum and dad were doing. They were buying stuff and land and stuff like that. Mum did. But again, for me, it was, I went to a stage where, you know, I did buy houses when I made the Super Rugby.
Mm.
And then I still didn't have that sort of financial literacy that, which I like to think that I do have now. Mm.
Nice.
Because, you know, now it's more thinking about the kids.
Yep.
I did have some business in Paris that obviously COVID didn't allow it to become what it should have been.
Yep. Did you start that right around that time?
Yeah, it was 2018. Okay. And obviously sold the stuff that I had in Christchurch at that time. So that was tough.
Yep.
Working hard for all that, and I only have myself to blame. And so for me, the real learning is, okay, you had a go and didn't come out the way you wanted. You're still young, and now you're in a position now with a new career in real estate to rebuild everything and go again, but making sure that that doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
But how
long did you have that business for?
Was it a restaurant?
Restaurant,
and then I had a
restaurant in France.
Yeah,
you know, the blend of fine dining.
I know. In a way, you know, it affected my family and affected me as well. And as a man, you know, I've faced up and take full responsibility and accepted what had happened. But who knew that COVID was going to be there? So now it's like I'm so excited about what's ahead, because it's easy to keep thinking about all the bad decisions, but who doesn't have bad decisions?
That's right. It is part of life, isn't it?
100%. You know,
and so, challenges that we face along the way. So it is part of it. So
for me, it's like I'm so excited about what's gonna in the next 3 to 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that's me.
Because that's the one thing. That sort of drives me to get there and obviously provide for the kids.
Yeah, wow. And you know, from those early contracts in rugby, do you receive any financial advice from the NZR, NZ Rugby?
Yeah.
Do they come in and they do a bit of a spiel, or do they provide ongoing support, or?
No, it did. It did. They did very, very well of providing all that.
Great.
But again, you know, some things you go through in life, go through the mistakes, which I'm the example of that, an example of that. So, I sit here and I say, look, you know, I've had some bad decisions, but now it's time to always look forward.
What would you say to some, you know, the young guys? What advice would you give them coming through, starting their rugby careers, and potentially, you know, they'll have the potential to go overseas and earn that top dollar? What advice would you give to them, kind of looking back now?
I think with anything, it's having a plan in place.
Yep.
I think I did have a plan of just, you know, buying houses, which I did. And then, obviously, me being in overseas and being in Paris, that kind of changed a lot of my mindset. And but again, you know, if having someone that will give you advice is really important as well. I know I'm in real estate, but you can't go wrong with real estate, especially like it's something where it'll appreciate over time.
That's right.
If you buy good in a good location, you know, your money will always grow.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, well, what are the key kind of things you should look for when kind of investing in property? Is obviously location is one.
Location, you know, the bedrooms, how many bedrooms, because it all depends on the yield, cap rate, as you call them as well. It's always between that 5 to 10%.
Yep.
I'll leave the financial side to you. But it always comes down to location, because then you have the more bedrooms you have, you can put more people in there, creates that income.
Yeah.
And then I think one thing I will say is that investing in properties, that will tick over by itself. And you can just focus on just playing the best rugby you can possibly can. The one thing I did try and do is doing business. So it's so hard because you got to be there a lot of the time. Unless you have a partner or someone run.
Who's the kind of operator of all of the business
committed
itself.
To
do the day-to-day running.
100%. And whereas real estate, you buy good, buy well.
Yes.
And you just let it tick over itself, and then just focusing on doing what you're good at, and really maximize that income.
Nice. What do you enjoy spending money on? Like, what's your kind of guilty thing that you spend?
Gosh. I'm a sucker for good things, you know. Like I like the finer things in life, and I think I got that from mum, just because if you buy well, it's going to last.
True. The quality.
It's all about the quality. So props to mum for that. I think now, with the stage of my life, I just love property.
Yes.
Because you see the value of it.
Yeah, the graph goes like that over time. 100%. It might go up and down, but the general graph is increasing.
Yes.
Yep.
Again, you know, it took me to go through challenges to get to this point.
Yep.
To really, for a light bulb to go off.
Yeah, cool.
But now I'm just focusing on building my property portfolio.
Nice. How do you deal with Fat Lovey Lovey? And for those, you know, listening, Fat Lovey Lovey and Samoan culture is very similar in amongst Pacific cultures around providing gifts for, you know, celebrations like weddings or when we're kind of mourning and we want to support family during a funeral or something like that. So generally we come together and we provide money gifts. I just wanted to see how you dealt with that over the years and how that might have changed and how you deal with that now.
Thankfully, mum and dad deals with all of that.
Okay.
And I think so grateful for them and the support of my family, my siblings, and they're able to sort of help me out at this stage of my life, going through the challenges. And so they've been able to take care of that while I rebuild again. But I know at a certain point I'll have to be the one controlling that, because I'm the oldest in the family, and as you know. So for now, I am forever grateful for my family, my sister and my brothers.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They've been amazing.
Because that's not always the case. Obviously, you know, different families and have different routines and ways of doing things. So that's really cool.
Yeah, so they've been, my brothers and my sister have been amazing. So, and that's what it's all about.
It's
all about family.
Cool. And what's your best savings tip?
Buy real estate.
Save in real estate.
It's simple as that.
Because you're putting it away into an investment.
Yeah,
right?
And you know it's gonna grow over time. You know, you have money. You know, we hear about, you know, all the, you know, the finance gurus of the world. They said, you know, you make money while you sleep, you know, and that's
true.
It's a great example of you know, of a tip of making money is buying real estate and not having it in the bank.
Yeah.
Especially inflation now at 4.7%. So you got to look at a way where it grows yearly for more than 4.7%. So that's why you always look at the, you know, your how much of you get out of your rentals compared to the inflation rate.
True.
And I'll leave that up to you again. But you know what I mean.
Yes. Nice. Invest in real estate. What's your advice to those whose goal is to be better with money?
Knowledge is everything.
Cool.
And more so with this. And I speak that because I've gone through my challenges.
Yeah.
And to the point now where I am in being very particular with what I do and having a plan in place. And I think like what you're going to offer in educating people, and I see what you're doing on social media, you know, that triggers the conversation. And that's, that's all it needs to have is once you have that conversation, you find out more and then you start to dig deep and next thing you know, you're in the right path. So, you know, I really encourage you to keep that up. Yeah, so, nice. Because people need to know, they need to be educated on the subject.
Me. Well, thank you also. Thanks for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, sharing your insights, sharing your experiences. We'll have all your links to Casey Lolala at Harcourt's Gold below, as well as my links too.
Awesome.
If you're looking to get finance to purchase some of the properties Casey is selling. So, hey, thank you very much also.
Thank you also for having me as well. And first recipient of
Fresh Money.
Fresh Money.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
That's awesome.
Cheers, brother.